Other horns don't.
Everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the same place they play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, you listen.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Don't let them play against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO as a team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Fear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, the tide dispatched the crew of volunteers from Tennessee. Or as their coach might like to say, the red team beat the orange team.
Yeah, man, when I read that prior to the game, I was like, how lame is that, that they're not even referring to us by name? I guess they needed some extra motivation to try to get up for this game. I mean, what is it? They had lost six times in a row, and now it's seven. Man, let's face it. It is Tennessee, and we could have put 70 on these guys, and I would have just been grinning even wider than I was after the final score.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's very high school and very amateurish of the teams that do this. And Ohio State and Michigan, they kind of go back and forth. You know, the team in blue and, you know, the team upstate or you know, whatever it is. Urban Meyer kicked out NFL scouts for wearing the color blue. That seems ridiculous. Fran even tried to call, you know, Auburn the team down the road, and just, you know, even in fans, they nickname different teams. They call them the Gators or the Volunteers or stuff like that. That's just stupid. Let's just line up and beat the snot out of them. And, you know, besides that, who cares about any of the other garbage?
Absolutely. And I just love that Nick Saban appreciates the two biggest rivalry games on our schedule, and that he acknowledges how big these are to the team, the administration, the students, and the alumni before each of these beatdowns, but, you know, to Tennessee and Auburn. I just love how he realizes how important this is to beat the snot out of the Tennessee Vols.
Yeah, and it becomes that much more, you know, kind of cold-blooded when, hey, I respect your program, I respect what you do, and now I'm a tattoo in your, you know, right behind the ear.
Well, and we cannot underestimate that this team came in with the hype of a senior-laden offensive line, right? And they had, what, six or seven senior starters on defense. And, I mean, I think four of the offensive linemen are seniors and one was a junior for Tennessee.
Yep.
And so for them to come in with a senior tailback, senior tight end, four senior offensive linemen, all the seniors they had on the defensive line, I really thought they would be able to at least hold their own in the trenches a little bit. But really, from the get-go, Alabama was able to do whatever they wanted to do.
If there's ever been a team, you know, in recent years that just, you know, they've got the parts and they've got the pieces and they just can't synchronize, they just can't put it together, it's Tennessee. Because just like you said, they had four senior offensive linemen. The other, Tiny Richardson, the junior, is rated as a top lineman in the draft, so they could be replacing all five of their linemen next year. Their top running back is a senior. All four of their starting defensive linemen, just as you've said, you know, they're seniors. They're going to be replacing both trenches next season. You know, last season, when they had a lot of these same players just primarily as juniors, they had three, and then, you know, Derek Rogers, you know, kind of blew a mental gasket and had to go somewhere else. But they had, you know, Patterson, and I can't name all the players, but they had, you know, three just top flight receivers that are now all in the NFL. And Tyler Bray wasn't a bad quarterback. He was just a little bit of a head case. And you think, man, if there's ever been a team that just couldn't write, you know, click, but had the talent and the capability of doing something, it's this Tennessee squad. And, you know, there's not many teams that I would feel worse for, or that I would, you know, not be inclined to feel bad for than Tennessee. But, you know, this is a team that's right on that cusp, and next year they're going to struggle. You know, you don't replace your full defensive line and your full offensive line. Look at us. you know, we struggled at the beginning of the season replacing three offensive linemen. They very well could be replacing all five next year.
Oh, sure. And coming into this game, right, Daniel McCullers was the guy that everybody was looking out for, right?
Yep.
He was the 6'8", 351 pounder in the middle. And so, you know, you always ask me what's the first thing that jumped out at you in these games. And it had to be, you know, Ryan Kelly getting the start.
Yes.
And so I immediately looked at that and I said, wait a minute. Why is Ryan Kelly out there? And so for him to get the nod over Lindsey, and apparently from the media reports, it was, you know, kind of last minute who was going to be the guy. And so for him to get out there and welcome back to the starting lineup, and now I want you to go out there and take care of the 6'8", 351 pound guy, that was a tall order from the get-go.
Yeah, I honestly thought that, you know, for at least this season, that he was going to be Wally Pipped. I thought that, you know, his injury and the way Chad Lindsey came in and just played, and then the way, and again, we've talked about this, and is it Chad Lindsey elevating the line, or is he just along for the ride as you know, they all improve? Well, I think this game kind of told the message, because if you didn't know that Ryan Kelly was in for Chad Lindsey, you wouldn't know. Because I thought the line played very, very well, and he just stepped in and played as if he had not missed any time, as if he had been growing and maturing with the line all season long.
Well, let me say, when I went back and watched the replay on CBS, you know, Gary Danielson, who I love listening to, and he's spot on a lot of stuff.
He is.
He did not notice Ryan Kelly in the game until the opening series of the second half. Well, and I had to go back and listen. And I had to go back and listen to that a second time. And he said, Ryan Kelly has entered the game for Alabama. And I was like, wow. And so, you know, and he doesn't miss much. So I thought that was interesting. But I thought it was, you know, having him back, okay, and having him at 290 pounds mismatched by 60 pounds, I thought it was very interesting how we started the ball game. And so specifically on the opening drive, we lined up, you know, on second and third down in the same formation, just with Yeldon on opposite sides, and had the action of throwing to Cooper out in the flats to the left on second down, and then obviously for the big touchdown on third down out to the right in the flats. And so I thought it was interesting that we ran the same play out wide to Cooper right off the get-go, back-to-back on each side.
Yep.
And so, do you think that was more of trying to get Cooper involved early, or do you think that was taking some pressure off of Ryan Kelly by going against the edges, or do you think it's something they saw in film? Because it looked like the DBs were playing about 8 or 9 yards off the wide receivers.
Well, not to kind of cheat on the answer, but, you know, it could potentially be a little bit of both, because I think a little bit is to get Cooper some action, but we're going to work him into the action. I think if I had to pick the top reason, it's because we saw something on film and, you know, we went right to it. And, you know, the third play of the game, a minute and a half into the game, you know, we've got a 54, you know, yard touchdown. I think it was something about, we saw something about how they were covering those wide receivers, because, you know, when Cooper gets the ball in his hand, he's down the sideline and there's no one really, you know, there's people chasing him, but there's no one that's a threat to tackle him. And you go back and look, and it's a defensive end and like a linebacker out there. And I think we saw something that said, if we can get him the ball, it's one move and it's a touchdown from anywhere on the field if they're going to cover him with a, you know, a defensive end and a linebacker and not have a safety over top. I think it was what we saw in film.
Well, on the second down play, second and four, Yeldon's to the right of AJ and he motions out to the flats to the left. He does the block in the back, okay, where Cooper has a 10-yard run that's negated. Well, then on the third down play, he's lined up to the left of AJ now, but instead of motioning out to the right, he goes up the middle. And I only bring that up because on both of those two plays back to back, Chris John Jones was out wide left with Amari. He was out wide right with Amari. And so our best blocking wide receiver was right next to Cooper, which means that's where we were going for sure. And Yeldon gave action that drew the safety away. Mm-hmm. So on the touchdown play, Yeldon went through the middle like it was like he was going out for a pass pattern, and he kind of drew the safety that was high in the middle away from the play. And so I just, when I saw that, I had to go back and watch it a couple of times. I was like, man, both of these DBs are lining up 8 and 9 yards off of Christian and Amari. And they just did the same thing on the second down play. And so it was just, it was something we have not done all year to intentionally go to Amari back to back, left and right off the get-go like that.
No, and we probably won't do that again because I don't think they'll leave him uncovered like that. So.
Oh, no, absolutely. They were just so far off that Christian was able to go and block his man, and Amari just had one man to beat, and then he was, you know, off to the races.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I want to, you know, kind of layer in there that it just continues to show the progression that Amari's making relative to, you know, his ankles and feet and toes and you know, sort of all of the injuries that he's gone through. You know, if he continues to develop and kind of emerge, he's going to be back to where he was pretty directly. And then it's going to be really impressive how we incorporate him into the offense.
Oh, sure. Well, I will say I think the bye week is coming at a good time for him because while it's been a toe situation for starters, he did get his knee banged up in this game and came out and had a brace and was on the stationary bike. And so – do you know on the post pattern where AJ just overthrew him?
Mm-hmm.
I found it interesting that we called his number on that play late in the third quarter, I think it was, because he was already banged up at that point. And as soon as that play was done, he kind of went ahead through the end zone over to the sideline.
Yes.
And he was noticeably limping on that knee. And so that was a situation where it's like, okay, he's already got a knee brace on. He's already on the stationary bike, right? And he's coming back full speed finally. And then you run a go post route to him. I didn't understand why his number was called on that play. Why not Kenny Bell or something?
I think it's a little bit of let's try to work on his timing on passes down the field. You know, I don't think
with a bum knee though. If his knee's hurting him, right? Why call him? How's he going to get the timing right in that situation?
Well, apparently we thought he was okay enough to put him out there. I'm not saying I know we're going to hit you over the knee and the hammer and go run a play. I think we thought that he was okay enough to go out and play, and you know certainly he has some input into that as well. So that that's why I think we put him out there. And you know, at this point in the season, probably everyone has a little bit of a gimp to him. So, you know, hopefully, like you said, this off week is going to be good for him and good for other players as well. You know, we could have left him out. We put him in there and tried to go for him deep. I think a couple times, you know, we talked about, you know, Saban kind of calling off the dogs when the opponent, you know, kind of waves a white flag. And that's not saying we want the opponent to quit or that they shouldn't have some fight into them. But there's a little bit, you know, there's a margin there for, you know, for them to, you know, say, you know, guys, let's live to fight another day. And I think we took some shots and left our starters in, you know, when Tennessee kept fighting and clawing and they scored that late touchdown. And I honestly think if they had punted there, we might have brought our reserves in a little bit earlier, but you know, we marched them right back out on the field and drove the length of the field and ended up with a field goal. And I think we swapped them out at that time. So a couple interesting dynamics there.
Well, it's funny you say that because I truly think that had Kenyon Drake not fumbled at the goal line, okay,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's a missed opportunity for a touchdown. And then Amari Cooper's pass interference call, which I just do not agree with. I even went back and listened to the Tennessee announcers to see how they called that play. And even they said it was just very light contact.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, my gosh. And so those are two touchdowns that really should have happened. And I point that out because had we gone into the locker room up 42-0 instead of 35 And then had we had that Amari Cooper touchdown on our first series of the second half, and now it's 49-0, we might have seen the AJ guys hitting the bench fairly early in that third quarter if those two touchdowns, you know, would have happened for us.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Hey, talk a little bit about the offensive line, because we talked about Ryan Kelly. I do think he kind of held his own in the game, but I thought the offensive line once again did a pretty good job of keeping AJ clean. He really had plenty of time in the pocket that he could really check down, you know, to really run through his reads to his second and third receiver on numerous times and check down to the running back a lot.
Yeah, you know what? There's a couple things on the offensive line, and so, you know, we can kind of step through a couple things here, maybe a part. You know, there was no sacks, and so that speaks to your point that AJ had time, and he had a lot of time. You know, he was running around back there, and he was signaling to receivers, and had a nice pitch and catch with, you know, Norwood as a result of that, and we can talk about that. But, you know, one thing that – and it's just one of those things, we say it out loud, and you think, man, that's representative of how dominant of a performance it was. But the first play that Tennessee made in our backfield was when they tackled Derrick Henry for a 3-yard loss with 5 minutes left in the game. And so that was our backups who gave that up. So that's a pretty impressive stat. That was, you know, we talked about Kelly starting in place of Lindsey. Grant Hill did not come in. We talked about this last week. This week was very similar. Grant Hill came in with the twos, but he did not rotate and sort of platoon with Shepard with the ones. And so he was a true two. And then you start thinking.
And once again, Shepard had a good game.
And Shepard did have a good game. And I start thinking about the twos. And one thing we talked about last week, and so, you know, I'm glad the coaches are tuned in and listening to what we're saying. But, you know, we brought Kellen in. Instead of leaving Ari in, we brought Kellen in at that left guard, had Lindsey at center, and brought in Alphonse at that right guard. And so, we had Kellen, Lindsey, Alphonse across the middle positions. And so we talked specifically about that last week. And then you throw in the tackles, Leon Brown, and for my money, the jury's still out. He's improved, you know, leaps and bounds from spring, and that was required for him even to find the field. And then we've got Grant Hill at that right tackle spot. But if you go left to right on our offensive line, Leon Brown, Kellen Williams, Chad Lindsey, Alphonse Taylor, and Grant Hill, Tommy, three of those guys in the second unit have started or sort of slash started with us. And I use Grant Hill kind of in that last. And I think that, and I mean this in a good way, not you know, that we're talent deficient, that this may be the second unit, the best second unit I've seen us field. Two of them I've started. Three of them I've played with our starters this season, even as the line continues to grow and emerge and play as well as we have over the last few weeks. This may be the best second unit I've seen.
Well, a lot of this has to do with, you know, losing the linemen that we did. But I think since you and I have been covering the team as fans and now doing the podcast, I can't recall ever having eight guys having played on the line as starters at this point in the season, for sure.
No.
And I do like having Kellen in there at left guard and with Lindsey, right? I mean, I'm still a big fan of Lindsey. And so I hope that he continues to push Ryan Kelly. I hope Grant Hill continues to push Austin Shepard. And that can only help these guys. I think from a pass blocking standpoint, Airy has gotten noticeably better to me with each passing week.
Yep.
I noticed on a couple plays on watching the replay where he had his guy one-on-one. He had no help. He was brawling, being very physical. He was extending his arms. He wasn't letting the defensive lineman get up under his shoulder pads. He had good leverage. And, you know, he is definitely doing far more than you and I ever thought he was going to be able to bring to the table given these knee injuries. And so I'm just so happy for that kid.
Yeah, one thing one thing kind of, you know, maybe put in your hat and think about later is, you know, we experimented moving him to the right tackle spot in fall camp. And, you know, for a few days, it looked like that was going to have some merit, but it, you know, it just didn't pan out. I would not be surprised, and we're talking spring practice, so let's not get crazy about, you know, doing this kind of shakeup in the season, but I wouldn't be surprised if it's fair game when we go into spring drills that, you know, maybe he has an opportunity to get some reps there. So we'll see. It will be a lot of competition across the offensive line. You know, Grant Hill will be vying for positions, and so will other guys. But carry it back to the starting lineup. I was very surprised that Chad Lindsey was not in there. Again, I thought that he had earned, and I hate to say that a player loses the starting role due to injury, but sometimes that happens. And Chad did come in, and the offensive line did play a lot better. And he was part and parcel of that. He was not the reason, but he was part and parcel of it. And I thought that, you know, why mess with a good thing? And so I was very surprised that he was not starting. But hats off to Ryan Kelly. You know, he proved something, that he was back ready to come in. And, you know, we spotted it. You know, I'll take the point for us over Danielson, even though he makes big bucks to do what he does. But we noticed that, you know, second or third play into the game. So I'll give us a little bit of credit for that.
No, absolutely. Well, man, let's talk a little bit about Kevin Norwood. It's a shame that, you know, Andrew Gribble from AL.com, you know, had a good piece where he pointed out some stats here, which I just want to give him good credit for. And, you know, he had an article just talking about that his six receptions for 112 yards were both career highs for him.
Yeah.
And in his article, he just said, you know, a long time coming. And I just have to second that. I just love from the catch he made at Texas A&M until this phenomenal catch he made in this ball game where our friend Eric turned to me and said, man, that's one of the best plays I have ever seen in person. And I just love this third down, dependable, clutch go-to guy really just blossoming and just showing so much more to his game and evolving as a player. And I love the passion and emotion that he's bringing on the field with him. He's just a nice spark plug, and him and Chris John Jones might be the most impact players on the offensive side of the ball right now.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, and that's, you know, with Amari poised to really break out. But, you know, I want to kind of park on, you know, Norwood there with you as well. I think he might be one of, you know, he might be one of our most underrated offensive weapons, you know, in the last several years. He's a guy that I would put him at the top of the list of, you know, who are we going to miss most on offense this year? And, you know, obviously you have to say McCarron, but, you know, in terms of guys that we're going to miss that, you know, because everyone's going to point to, you know, Cyrus and you know, AJ and, you know, okay, I mean, he can't argue with that, but, you know, Norwood's going to be the guy that we just miss, and something, you know, we're going to say something's missing. What is it? Well, Michael Williams was that guy last year, and we've talked about how we've missed him. Norwood's going to be the guy, you know, this year, the sideliner. He's a maestro down the sidelines, and some of the athleticism that he has showed the last couple weeks. I mean, he's putting on a clinic. I think some NFL team is going to get this guy because his stats aren't going to be spectacular because we spread the ball around, even though he's having one of his better seasons, his stats, you know, are still not going to jump off the page. But someone's going to get a weapon, and this is going to be a kid that we're going to miss. And, you know, two more things that I want to hit. You know, on that spectacular catch that he made, you know, McCarron was running around and did, you know, kind of, you know, put his arm up and kind of waved at Norwood, knowing that, you know, Norwood was going to alter his route, break off. And then McCarron then took his eyes off the receiver, looked at the coverage, planted his foot and threw it. And he just knew where Norwood was going to be. And Norwood made just a spectacular catch. And then if you look, and I read that article you talked about, and, you know, one of the things he mentions in there, and I've been debating on, you know, kind of bringing this up in the podcast the last couple of weeks. But, you know, one of the things, if you compare and contrast Norwood and the leadership that he shows, and you think with that touchdown that he scored on Saturday, go back to the first touchdown he scored when he backflipped into the end zone and, you know, hardly played for the rest of the season after that because it ticked off Saban.
Oh yeah. He's come a long way since that play. But I think, you know, going back to the offensive line for a second, in that article, Andrew mentions that, you know, there's been 128 passes thrown since the last quarterback sack. And yep. So that kind of play doesn't develop without the confidence that AJ has that he's back there clean.
Yeah.
And that's so huge, right? Because you and I both know that this kid goes down and this season's over. Period. Yes. It's not over. Will it still be a success? Sure. But will it be at the bar of a national championship? No, it won't be.
It won't be that. You know, you mentioned, you know, no sacks and so many snaps, and that becomes such a big number that it's, you kind of lose the context of that. We've had no sacks in the month of October.
Yes. Yes.
That's pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. And as this team continues to develop, this team's got some athletes. Okay. And they're having hard times, but they definitely have some athletes. And they really didn't even get a really clean shot on AJ, which I thought was huge. Yep. Hey, I want to touch on one play sequence on the second touchdown right after, you know, Norwood's big catch, when we're lining up at the goal line and AJ gets the touchdown. I just wanted to quickly mention, because I just found this interesting, and I was able to see a great angle on this from the CBS replay, you know, better than even in the stands. On that rush, we took Austin Shepherd and O.J. Howard, and we had them blocked down. So Austin proceeded to take Steen's man, and O.J. took Shepherd's man. And Steen was able to back up and basically do a kick-out block on O.J.'s guy. And so then Justin Fowler comes in, just like we did in the Arkansas game, And he takes on the linebacker in the hole for TJ to follow. I just want to point out again how hard that is for an offensive lineman to be able to quickly make that kind of a block on the goal line, you know, in that situation. And so once again, it's just a great scheme. It's a great play. It's putting the guys in a position to be successful. And so instead of making Austin Shepherd and O.J. Howard the true freshman, block the guy in front of you and drive him 5 yards off the ball. No, it's a lot easier to block down and they cleared out. Both of those guys, to their credit, took their guys completely out of the play toward Ryan Kelly. And then Steen does what he does and Fowler did what he did. And so I just the CBS replay did an overhead where you could just see it all materialize, right? Yep. And it's just kind of how you would draw it up on a chalkboard. Nice. And so it was just so neat to watch it on the replay.
Yeah, it's good to see, you know, sort of that technical execution. You know, we're putting guys in position to be successful. We're executing it, you know, with efficiency. You know, hats off. You know, I like Jeff Stoutland, and he was here for a couple of years and had success. You know, I like Pendry ahead of him. And I like Mario Cristobal and what he's doing on the offensive line. So, you know, sort of the last three offensive, you know, line coaches that we've had, you know, they've all been different. They've all kind of, you know, brought, you know, what it is that they bring to the system. And we know in some respects it's mostly Coach Saban's system, but, you know, they all coach it up very, very well. And this unit really has started to come together. And that's maybe one thing that's underrated in terms of, you know, not only did we replace three starters, but we replaced the offensive line coach as part of the process as well. And we seem to, you know, at no expense in terms of a loss, we seem to have overcome that pretty good. And here we are sitting, you know, at 8-0 and, you know, poised for, you know, what this last stretch has for us.
Well, and to your point, right, we've replaced offensive coordinators under Saban's tenure and offensive line coaches, right, of which both of those should be huge pieces, and we've been able to keep clicking along.
Yep.
I do think that's where Justin Fowler got his concussion.
Yep.
Is he took A.J. Johnson in the hole, and it was a helmet-to-helmet kind of collision, and I wasn't able to see if Justin came back on the field.
I don't
think he did. This was about 8 minutes into the first quarter.
Yep.
And so, unfortunately, this is when I think he got his concussion.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, what else jumps out at you on offense?
Just the incredibly fast start. We commented last week in the podcast that, you know, it was unfortunate for Arkansas that we jumped up 14-0, you know, about 11 minutes into the game. But we jumped up on Tennessee 14-0 with about 9 minutes, with about 9 minutes left in the first quarter, not 11 minutes Correct. In, but nine, you know, more like 6 minutes in. And then, you know, if you look at the end of the first quarter and you think, you know, how are things going? Let's do a pulse check. At the end of the first quarter, it's Alabama 21-0, Tennessee 1 first down.
Oh, sure. CBS showed a stat at some point in the game where Alabama had had 16 first downs and Tennessee had ran 15 offensive plays.
There you go. So but numbers but slice and dice a lot of different ways, right?
I mean, but that's a horrible stat, right? Yes. Oh my gosh. But I will touch real quick on the third touchdown for Alabama. You know, I really don't know what happened there. There was some mishaps in the miscommunication in the secondary for Tennessee, because on that third touchdown, it was 3rd and 10, and they left Kevin Norwood wide open.
Yep.
I mean, you and I could have completed that touchdown pass. Yep. I could have threw a lame duck out there and he still would have been able to catch it.
Yep.
Hey, the other thing I do want to mention real quick is Coach Saban said after the game on an ESPN BCS selection show, when he was on their little bus or whatever,
sure,
he was talking to Reese and he just mentioned how this team is controlling the tempo. And I just wanted to mention real quick that as we have gotten into facing more and more teams that are running more plays and running the no huddle and the quick offense, et cetera, what Alabama is doing very, very successfully is, you know, in years past, it was 3 yards in a cloud of dust. Mm-hmm. And it was, we are going to physically just manhandle you. And so you and I are finally starting to see what we talked about in the preseason with all these little toys that AJ's got at his disposal. And so I just find it interesting that our Saban's point was great that they are controlling the tempo of the game, still putting pressure, right? Still putting the foot on the throat, like you just said, but they're controlling the tempo and keeping that other explosive offense off the field.
Yes. Yep.
Hey, yeah. Hey, anything else on offense before we flip the field?
I just want to call out, you got wonky on some lineup, and you know, I kind of want to do that too. I like the end around of Christian Jones, and we saw the formation where they had a tight end. We brought in a wide receiver in very close on the line of scrimmage, very close to the tight end. We had Christian Jones kind of in a slot position, and so normally, you know, the tight end and the slot and wide receiver are stretched across that whole side of the field. You know, kind of imagine them compressed into a tight triangle, and so we ran. I think second possession of the game, we ran up the middle but faked the end around action. And, you know, you and I commented that, hey, they did not even read Christian Jones on that. Watch for the end around. And it was about 15 plays later, we lined up in that same formation. And we said, "This here it comes. You know, here's the end around." Now, we didn't expect the reverse off of the end around.
Right.
But Christian Jones definitely showed, you know, some superior athleticism. You know, he ran the end around. They had actually clogged that up. And so he just reversed field and he ran a lot farther than the 20 yards that he gained. But that was some impressive play there.
Oh, it was. And it's just the versatility that Christian Jones is bringing, with also his just physical way that he plays the game. And both he and Norwood have just really stepped up. And, you know, our friend Greg told us, you know, prior to the Virginia Tech game, you know, what if Amari Cooper doesn't pick up where he left off, right, at the end of last season? And so for these other guys, I mean, I would not have thought at this point in the season that we would have, you know, 7 different guys with 10 or more receptions and 9 different guys with at least a touchdown catch.
Yep.
I knew we'd spread the ball around, but it's just a little bit more than I anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about all of this production, all of this moving down the field, all of this spectacular play. You know, we've not mentioned DeAndre. We've not mentioned Kenny Bell. And then one guy I want to kind of get a little bit of word in is O.J. Howard. We went to him, and again, it was another situation where, you know, AJ was kind of motioning, and, you know, OJ, you know, we threw the ball to him, and he kind of stepped out of the back of the end zone and caught the ball. And I honestly believe that, you know, you kind of have to look at it and see the height ratios and, you know, and exactly how high the ball was. But that's a play that, you know, OJ's a freshman and he's going to learn from. But that's also a play that Michael Williams, you know, plants his feet and then just says, I'm going to jump straight up and I'm either going to catch it or I'm not, but I'm going to be in bounds. Whereas OJ was more concentrated on, let me go to position myself to make the easiest catch on the ball. And then, oh, now I'm 3 yards out of the end zone.
Yes. I think that is a play that we will see him handle differently down the road.
Yes. Well, who do you give your mini game ball to on offense?
Man, I want to give it to Kevin, but I know that doesn't really qualify, so I won't do that as much as I would like to. You know, I guess I'll probably end up giving it to Ari. In the pure spirit of the mini game ball, so many of these guys are headline guys now. And I think Ari and Austin Shepherd are two guys that we've talked about that continue to improve their game. Neither one of them are doing anything where I'm just blatantly saying, man, they blew that assignment. So why don't I do a little mini game ball action to Austin and Ari and give the big ugly some love.
Yeah, I'm absolutely on board with you there. And in fact, I'm going to go offensive line as well. I'm giving my mini game ball to Ryan Kelly because CBS didn't know he played until the second quarter.
There you go. That's good.
And the fact that that's good, right? They didn't know because, well, of course they're not going to play someone other than the guy that's been dominating. So I don't even have to look at that.
Correct.
And oh, he's been playing. So, you know, we didn't even miss that the dominant guy wasn't in there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, flip us over to defense. You know, what jumped out at you? What stood out at you? What said, hey, Tommy, look at me first on defense?
You know, the first thing just had to be when I heard prior to the game that Cyrus was going to get the start. And so, you know, Andrew even touched on Saban spent a lot of time talking about Eddie Jackson in the press yep. conference. And apparently there's been a lot of questions about that. And he talked about how, you know, the two toughest positions for true freshmen to make an impact is offensive line and the secondary. And so that is why I think we are seeing Eddie on special teams. That's why I think Cyrus and Sylvie has been given the opportunity. And so the first thing to me was, who's out there with Dion? And it was Cyrus. And, you know, he made a misplay on a run that I'll break down here in a minute. But he had a couple pass deflects against a much bigger, more physical receiver. And so all in all, in his first start, I think he played pretty well.
Yeah, I think he did. I think he did as well. It's, you know, it's almost hard to believe that that was his first start because we've seen him rotate in so much and play. But that was his first start. You know, you think a couple of weeks ago, you know, maybe, you know, I've kind of blocked off October as our month of, you know, sort of team self-improvement. And, you know, there's certainly some metrics that point to that. But there was a period of time he was not in the rotation. You know, after the A&M game, he spent some time not playing. And so within, you know, it just shows the juxtaposition and how quickly things can change. You know, here he is as a starter. And because Saban is speaking so much about, you know, the freshmen don't have the grind factor to stick after it. And they have the capability and the talent, but they just don't apply it throughout the week seemed to kind of be the message that he was putting out there in his radio show last Thursday.
Yeah, the film watching and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, right? And so, you know, obviously there's things that we don't see, right? And so, you know, if they're not there doing it, then, you know, clearly. Now, some of that I think that I don't know how much I buy into unless it's so obvious that they're just, you know, not doing film study. But, you know, and I would – and this is why, you know, I'm talking on the podcast and not coaching the team, but I would be finding ways to get Eddie Jackson back out there. But all of that said, you know, you have to go hats off to Cyrus, because in essence, what I'm saying is I'm trying to find reasons to get Cyrus off the field, and maybe the hardest reason to get Cyrus off the field is Cyrus himself and the play that he's putting out there. So, you know, the product that he's putting on the field is pretty darn impressive. You know, when Sylvie comes back healthy, it's going to be interesting how we continue to rotate and then the depth that we have out there. You know, Geno seems to be our starting dime. So when we go to dime, you know, we do have three corner type players out there, which is nice. But, you know, we talk about that being Cyrus's first start. You know, frankly, in terms of at the position, it was Landon Collins' first start. And we kind of talked about this could be a more athletic defensive backfield. What seemed to pay dividends in that respect straight from the start, because Landon Collins was making some big plays, and obviously his interception for a return, but he played well in his first start.
He did play well, and there were several plays where he came up from a deep safety, okay, and made a very physical tackle, which reminded me of Kevin Jackson, which was great, because I was like, man, that's something we need back there. That's
in the Wayback Machine.
That's in the Wayback Machine, but Mark Barron is the only one since Kevin Jackson which has brought that physicality from the center of the defense, and he's doing a little head hunting, okay? And also, there's a play that I want to point out where I'm going to pick on Cyrus a little bit, where they got the first points on the board, Tennessee did. It was just like a perfect storm. And so on their very first play from scrimmage in the second half, we are blitzing C.J. Mosley in the left gap between the guard and the center. And Trey DePriest, for some reason, takes the wrong gap and goes over there to fill in where he is and leaves his side of the middle linebacker space totally vacant. Well, Cyrus is covering the wide receiver over here, right? He does not even know that the ball has been handed off. He is so worried about the receiver, he's not even – he doesn't even have one eye in the backfield at all. I guess he's been so beat up about don't do that.
Right.
And so he's following the wide receiver who's running a slant pattern as a decoy. He runs right into Ha-Ha, who comes up to try to fill the hole that Trey has left vacant. So now Cyrus has gotten in the way, not been on the play, taken Ha-Ha out of the play, and now our two linebackers have both hit the left gap on the wrong side. So now, next thing you know, the Tennessee running back is off to the races. Well, in comes Landon Collins, and you can appreciate this so much better on TV than you can even in person, that he just comes in, runs right past CJ, right by Cyrus, right by Ha-Ha, and is the only guy closing on Neal, okay? Do I think Neal would have scored? No. But do I think he would have gotten to about the 5-yard line had not been for Landon? Yes. And then he has the presence of mind to not only am I the guy going to make the tackle, but I am going to punch the ball out and try to get a fumble.
Yep.
That is what flashed for me. Yep. I was like, wow, kid. You in that brief second saw the opportunity to try to make the big play. So yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah. Landon Collins is, you know, if we've talked a lot about him, if we've not said these words so distinctly, I just want to make sure that we're very clear on here. Landon Collins is a friggin' star.
He is. And so for him to make that play, and then turn around and make the big interception return for a touchdown that he made at the so right, those are like back-to-back big plays, right? He had the interception pick six right before the half, and then he had that play to start the second half.
Yep.
And so back-to-back, it's like, wow. And I think if I read correctly, which was a little bit surprising for a guy that has not been technically the starter all season, he was named a semifinalist for the Thorpe Award today.
Yes.
And I was like, wow.
Yeah.
That was pretty impressive.
Yeah, it most certainly is. And, you know, he's just being recognized, you know, for his play and his performance. And, you know, what's, and you're right, even though he wasn't really, it wasn't technically a starter, because we think of our base package. And so, you know, he was definitely getting a lot of run and a lot of rotation. Now he's just going to get a lot more. But yeah, what he brings to the team and what he brings to the field and the different positions, and you've kind of talked about this and broken it down, that, you know, he has made himself indispensable on the field with his knowledge of the positions. And then, you know, he goes out there and makes a play like this. You know, you can't say a good enough good things about Landon Collins. You know, he's just a flat out superstar.
Absolutely. Well, hey, what did you think about Tennessee pulling the red shirt off of one of their true freshman quarterbacks? You know, the CBS telecast says it had more to do with the thumb and Worley just couldn't go in the second half. I definitely, you know, I hate it for Worley, okay? But I selfishly am happy that we got some run against that type of a quarterback look for the whole second half.
Yeah, me too, right? Because he was playing that zone read kind of performance. And, you know, first couple plays, you know, frankly, we probably didn't spend a lot of time preparing for it, you know, just because that's not what they do. And, you know, who would have expected that they're going to burn a red shirt on a guy? And so, but we settled into it, and it's clearly something that we had prepared for against other teams. And so it was getting those guys, you know, getting our defense, you know, hey, we're going to kind of revert back to what we did against, you know, Ole Miss or, you know, another team in terms of responsibilities and such. And, you know, we seemed to stifle them, you know, pretty well after that. But yeah, it was good to get some extra run against that, because that's what we're going to see. You know, Auburn's going to do that. And, you know, certainly if, you know, you get to hopefully a championship game against, you know, what's looking like it could be in Oregon, you know, we're going to see all kinds of things, all kinds of play of that nature. So, yeah, I thought it was good.
Well, I do want to point out real quick that while the performance was dominating, the young wide receivers for Tennessee did not help out Worley or the true freshman. There was a couple opportunities to make plays that that they just dropped some balls.
Yeah, they had a number of, and it seemed a concentration of drops on third down
in the middle of the field where they were pretty wide open a couple times. Is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, yeah, they had opportunities. I don't know necessarily that they make a game out of it, but they certainly get some first downs, and they certainly move the ball on us and you know, control the time of possession a little bit more. But, you know, they just got alligator arms and dropped a lot of passes out there. And, you know, it's going to be hard enough to beat us anyways. But when you just are so free in giving the ball back to us, you know, that's going to be a long day.
No, absolutely. What did you think about, you know, there's been talk, discussion since the game of Brandon Ivory and that it was a medical issue, you know, that kept him out of this game, which to me is better than some type of a disciplinary situation. What we had heard that they might pull the red shirt off of D-liner in this game, but I was surprised, if you're going to do it, that you do it 6 minutes left in the game.
Yeah, I think there's a micro view of this, and I think there's a macro view of this. And the micro view of this is, we don't need this defensive player to win this game. This game is already in hand. It's literally going to be a handful of defensive snaps that we have left in this game. Why would we burn a red shirt for the sake of this game? And the answer to that, well, there's no reason in the micro. But I think if you step back and you look at it in the macro, and we talked about this in the preseason, you know, Saban approaches things with a mentality of abundance. He doesn't need to hide or protect or shield or disguise. He's going to put it out there. This is what I have. Try to stop it all, because it's quite a lot. And that mentality sort of carries itself into other facets. And so he's not, oh, we better preserve this year for this player. No, if we have a need, we're going to use it, because we can still get the most out of his career, and we can go get more guys in the recruiting trail. And so it probably speaks to two things. It probably speaks to, we're doing well in recruiting, and we have some other DLs that that we want. So from a roster management standpoint, we can go ahead and let this redshirt go and get him some playing time and get him some experience. I think it also means that Brandon Ivory's got a medical issue. We don't know what that is. He just couldn't play. And Saban says he's okay. But what does that mean? Okay relative to what? You know, he's going to live, but he'll, you know, not going to play for the next 3 weeks. I don't know. I don't know what that means. And so that could be intentionally vague. We also know that LaMichael Fanning is leaving the team. And so we're down another defensive lineman. And so if you start thinking about, well, we're going to play Auburn with their fast-paced play, that we need a lot of defensive linemen. And the objective really at this point is to get to, or have to, however you want to word it, play Oregon. And we're going to need a lot of defensive linemen. And we're going to need those defensive linemen ready at that point of need. And the way to get them ready, let's put him out there and let's see how he does with some initial snaps in a game that doesn't cost us anything. So I think in the macro, it's part of a larger design of we need some defensive linemen. We're going to need some defensive linemen ready to go. Let's just start the process of getting them ready.
I'm with you. And I wonder if it has more to do with the LaMichael Fanning situation and the Brandon Ivory situation both happening at the same time. I think those were the tipping point for Liner, I guess is what I'm saying. I think if Fanning's situation was clear and if Ivory was not banged up, however he's banged up, I don't think you would have pulled it on Liner.
I don't know. And this is where, you know, this is where we bring speculation, because we don't know. We're not inside the room. We're not inside, sure. You know, we don't have inside information. We just have our inside, you know, sort of perspective here. And I think that Liner is a different body type. You know, Liner is more of a Jonathan Allen body type than he is a Brandon Ivory or Josh Chapman body type. He's more of a defensive end than a true nose guard. And if you start thinking about, and LaMichael Fanning was a defensive end, and he's, you know, he's gone. Reports are that he's gone. He's transferring to Jacksonville State, and, you know, we hope the best for him. We don't know about Ivory. You know, we can presume that he's going to be back and he's going to be, you know, filled in that position. But if we're going to be playing these fast-paced, up-tempo teams, and we're going to go with our two defensive tackles, and we want them to be physical but then also fast and aggressive, Brandon Ivory doesn't necessarily fit that bill. No. I think I would rather have a Jonathan Allen in there at times against that style of offense than I would a Brandon Ivory. And if by dimensions, you know, we've not seen enough of their play to draw a true comparison, but when we start looking at height and weight, you know, sort of aspects and ratios, Liner is more Jonathan Allen than he is Brandon Ivory. And so if it's, let's get some of these young, quick, fast twitch, big defensive linemen, because that's what we're going to need, you know, kind of down the road and around the corner, then, you know, from that standpoint, it makes sense. But, you know, but we better, the expectation is, you know, and we kind of say better, I don't mean that, you know, threatening, but, you know, the expectation is pretty high. We better see him in some of these next games, or it does kind of become a waste. And we've seen that before too, under different coaches, but we've seen that too, where we burn a red shot. Oh, he must've really been coming on in practice. We're going to see a lot of him. And then we don't, you know, and then why do we burn his red shot for, you know, three plays again in a blowout? So, you know, we've seen that happen. I just hope we don't see that here with Dean.
Oh, sure. And Jonathan Allen, right, at 6'3 and 264, I think he is getting worked into more of the mold of the Jack linebacker and playing the edge like Duvall and Xavier Dixon do.
Yep.
Whereas Liner at 280 pounds, I think is more of that interior guy. And I guess the other guy that I would mention, you know, for the listeners that probably contributes to this is the loss of Dalvin Tomlinson earlier this year.
Yep. Yep.
Because I think if a red shirt Dalvin Tomlinson at 6'2", 287 has not gone down, and, you know, then there's a Dakota Ball, which we didn't anticipate he was going to do big things, but he's a redshirt at 6'2", 270. And so when you start to add up these guys, we have lost a decent amount of bodies. And so it kind of resembles the conversation we had with the offensive line, right? It's just we maybe are finally seeing really the depth that this program is starting to put out there.
Yeah, I think it would be very interesting to see how our defense was playing if we had Dalvin Tomlinson, because all reports were he was poised to really do something this year, and him being a red shirt as opposed to even Jonathan Allen, who's coming on playing well and playing early, he's a true freshman, and so there's a little bit of a learning curve and confidence build that he has to have to continue to see action. And you think, well, Dalvin Tomlinson was already, many steps down that path. It would have been fun. And, you got to pick up, you got to move forward. You can't overly lament the players that aren't playing. But, man, he would be one that would be, really interesting to see how his contributions to this team, what they would look like.
Oh, absolutely. I think that Jeffrey Pagan had maybe his best game of the season. He had some good pressures on the quarterback.
Yep.
I thought Ed Stinson was quiet but effective. He is that Brandon Dietrich from me. He is that guy that is getting valuable snaps as a starter who is not going to, he's not going to fill up the stat sheet, but he's not going to get you in trouble. And when there's a breakdown from the backup that's in for him who doesn't set the edge, boy, Stinson comes back in the game pretty quickly. And so I just wanted to mention his name because he's not getting the big Jadeveon Clowney plays by any means, but he is as valuable to me on this defense as a Kevin Norwood is on the offense.
Yeah, I agree. And, I think Pagan is kind of getting his legs back under him because I think he was a little bit dinged up. But I think there's also a little bit of, hey, coach isn't messing around here. He's taken a red shirt off D-liner at this point in the season. He's not going to take his red shirt off and then just let him kind of twist in the wind. He's going to play. He's going to get reps, which means he's going to take reps from someone. I want to make sure it's not me. And so I think there's a motivating force that a lot of these guys are gonna see as a response to Liner's redshirt being stripped.
Well, I'm glad you said that because it reminds us of the comment of Grant Hill and Austin Shepherd, right? Just to make a parallel, right? Mm-hmm. How has Austin Shepherd's play in the past 3 weeks, right? Elevated, elevated, elevated.
Sure.
You might be onto something there, man. Pagan might be saying, hey, I need to pick up my game here a little bit.
Yep.
I do have to touch real quick on the pick six from Landon Collins for Pagan, man. I know you were gassed, okay? I know this is, you're not typically a blocking guy.
I know what you're going to do.
You cannot let the quarterback knock you on your bottom. You can't let that happen.
I just think that's I knew you were going to do that.
You cannot do that.
It's not fair.
Oh, you can't do that, man. Come on. Are you really going to tell me that the team is not giving him some grief in the film room on that one?
If they were,
you're going to tell me the coach isn't rewinding that a couple times, really?
You know what, though? If I'm Pagan, I'm sitting there with a big grin and I'm laughing. And I said, where's Collins? He's in the end zone. He's in the end zone.
It's all good.
I'll say this. I do like what Collins said, and I even like the way he worded it. He was talking about that, and he said he saw Pagan out there, and he said that he was surprised that Pagan was that fast. And then he said that, and then so this was Collins. He said that he had the opportunity to run faster, but he elected to hang with his block.
That was
just like the way he put that out there. It's not like, it's not like I had to slow down or I had to, I had the opportunity to run faster, but I saw the quarterback coming and I saw a block. And there's a part of me, and I kind of like to overthink some of this sometimes, but there's a part of me that just as he was running, he was talking to, and they're running full speed. They're not talking, but there's from the stands, it's easy to kind of just envision, you know, him talking to Pagan saying, I'm right here, big boy. I'm right here, big boy. Take him out. And, you know, and he didn't level him. He didn't do, you know, what would have been cool and see the quarterback flying. And, you know, if you want to say the quarterback had an angle or whatnot, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt because he's a near 300 pounder, you know, running down the sidelines, clearing some way. And, you know, if the proof is in the pudding, you know, the quarterback didn't get a hand on Collins.
No, that's true. I also want to go back to Landon Collins for just a minute and just say that he was tops on the stat page. That might not be the last time we I know he's been second and third, et cetera, but that's the first time he was at the top of the page. Yep. And that will definitely not be the last time.
No, it will not. But, you know, speaking of right there at the top, A'shaun Robinson, you know, he didn't have any stats last week, so to speak, you know, but he had six, you know, he was in on six tackles, which again, you know, we're talking about these young guys, you know, the kids are all right. You know, he's a true freshman in there, two quarterback hurries, assisted in six tackles. So, you know, I like me some big man Robinson.
No, absolutely. Hey, what did you think about C.J. Mosley in this ball game?
Well, the Mosley report, it's, you know, it's interesting. This might be the first time, and in fact, I think it is the first time this season that he's not mentioned as a defensive player. He only had one tackle. And so he kind of blitzed the wrong way around where they were running a couple of times and only had one tackle, which, you know, is below his, you know, last week he had 10 and normally he's, you know, kind of six or seven. So, you know, I guess if you average the two games, he's on, you know, on his place. But you know, he seemed to be, you know, an emotional guy out there and directing him. So I think it demonstrates that he brings a lot more to the team than just his stat line, although his stat line typically is more than it was this time.
Well, I think it speaks to the depth of this team, right? I mean, for as impact of a player as he is, right, and how important we said he was to coming back this year. We said at the beginning of the season that the two big players, AJ and CJ, saying they will come back. That's kind of funny, AJ and CJ. Mm-hmm. The fact that they both decided to come back, right, when they didn't have to.
Yep.
Would you have said at the beginning of the season that CJ is going to have one tackle against Tennessee and we're still going to thump them? I probably wouldn't have.
No, the caveat, I'm not just trying to say something different. The caveat would have been, well, he got hurt then.
Yes.
That he was hurt. And so he could be hurt. And I'm not saying that he is. I'm saying, you know, in your scenario, he could have been hurt and then us still thump Tennessee. But then, you know, I'm couching it in he got hurt. And so the spirit of your question is he can play the whole game, be healthy. We're going to thump Tennessee and only have one tackle. No, I wouldn't have predicted that to happen, but yet that's what happened.
No, absolutely. Hey, I also want to touch on HaHa for a quick second. And this is the first game he has started since the Ole Miss game. And I just want to mention that he really came on in that Ole Miss game. Yes. And he was really starting to show the HaHa of last year. He finished that Ole Miss game with six solos, two assists, and two breakups. And he was at the top of the stat sheet in that game. And so I hope he will start coming on at the right time. And so if him and Landon can really put it together back there, wow, that will be some fun stuff to watch.
Well, that will be. And when he was suspended, I wasn't immediately concerned over him not playing, other than just I want him to kind of be in the rhythm. And I thought, well, if this truly is going to kind of take the course that it looks like it's going to take, it's a very contained issue, and he's going to be reinstated and he's going to have the opportunity to play, then, you know, I could see him sitting out two games, coming back and playing two games before the bye week, before LSU. And that's kind of how it played out. Unfortunately, Vinny got hurt, so he got, you know, HaHa got more opportunity to play last week than he would have. You know, it's just circumstances. You don't want Vinny to get hurt. But HaHa got more run last week when he came back, and so the game this week. And so, yeah, the off week, you know, he's probably primed, wanting to, you know, ready sort of physically to play another game. But everyone else probably needs the break. And, yeah, and if they get some good practice time together, the two of them, you know, they could come up big for us against LSU.
Well, I will touch on the DB situation and kind of like you in the same vein as you spoke about the offensive line, right? And the eight guys having played or three on the two deep having been, you know, significant with the one so far this year.
Yep.
How many times now the circumstances have dictated this with Deion Blue getting banged up against Texas A&M and, you know, Eddie Jackson apparently was banged up a little and Sylvie was banged up a little, et cetera. But do you recall a team since Saban has been here where we have gotten so much run from so many true freshman corners at this point in the season? We've gotten some decent experience, even with Maurice. I mean, this is good to see all these guys get out there.
No, I really haven't. And you know, even if you just kind of take off the label of a freshman, you know, when's the last time we've seen, and I don't have the list, I haven't done a count, but, you know, how many times have you seen just these many cornerbacks play, you know, Blue and you know, and even start, but, you know, certainly play, but you think of Blue and Cyrus and Eddie and, you know, John Fulton and, you know, you just mentioned, you know, Maurice, that's a lot of cornerbacks, but then you think of the safeties, you know, with right. Ha-Ha and Landon and Vinny,
Jarek,
and yes. Gino, you know, and Nick Perry's not out, you know, not playing, or he would have been back there.
He was already out there too. Yeah.
And so you start thinking, well, when's the last time we've seen us? And I'm not necessarily talking garbage duty either. This is, you know, kind of in the throes of the game. How many times have we seen this many DBs? And my answer off the top of my head is I don't know that we ever have. And certainly, you know, to the extent that we were still playing well and winning, I'd have to say never. You know, when we've had to go this deep into the lineup, be it the offensive line, you know, be it the defensive backfield, you know, kind of critical positions, we're not winning those games when we do that, Tommy.
For sure.
You know, we're just not. And, I remember, and Tommy, this will, you know, this kind of, you know, dates us relative to, you know, maybe some of our listeners, but, you know, I remember when we used to have DBs that, you know, they weren't that good. And we used to nickname them, you know, you know, yes. We had the DB, you know, that we call him Toast.
Yes.
That was his nickname. And yes. He continued to stay in the starting lineup. And so you think of, you know, and I don't want to beat up a guy, but, you know, equivalent of someone like a Fulton, well, we just get him out of the lineup. Now we rotate him back in because he's a fifth year senior and, you know, he's a program guy and he's done everything right. And it's like, oh, he's demonstrated some capability. And so, you know, there's a favoritism nod that we kind of give him because we want, you know, because we like him, right? And I'm saying that programmatically and, you know, certainly Saban. And so we like him. And so we want to kind of give him that, you know, that personal experience. But but he's not in the starting lineup. You know, we don't continue to roll out a guy that we've nicknamed Toast. And, right. And we've done that in years past. And so that's kind of a long way of saying I don't ever remember us playing this many guys and, you know, probably ever this many guys, and then certainly win. And, you know, another thing to think about, even if you start to add in the garbage time guys and a Jabril Washington gets an opportunity to play and Jay Miller, you know, gets some opportunity and you go way down and you just take a raw count of how many DBs have played. Well, Tommy, how many times have we seen us play a Tennessee game like this? And it's 24-17.
Yes.
And it is a contest until, you know, the seconds run out of the, you know, the last minute of the game. And there's no opportunity to bring, you know, the backups in. You know, sometimes not even the second teamers, you know, the full backups, much less, you know, hey, empty the bench. Let's get them all out there. And we are doing that with you know, seemingly with regularity.
Well, you're reading my notes because the margin of victory and the quick starts, right, and jumping on these guys early, okay, so that they do wave the white flag, and so we are getting to get more of these guys out there, has enabled us to play so many guys, so many snaps that that I don't think we've seen with these other teams' runs to the national championship. And so as you were sitting there talking about that, I decided to count this up. We got 18 DBs on our roster, okay? 13 DBs have seen the field for Alabama this season.
Yeah.
13. Dude, there are seasons that two seasons have gone by that I bet you we have not run 13 DBs out there in total.
No, there's been, you know, there's been times we haven't had that many on the roster, and that, and you're right that we've gone, you know, years without having that many different guys, you know, come out there and play. So it speaks to the depth. It speaks to the talent of the depth. It speaks to us putting in a lot of points so we can play those guys. And what it does is it almost becomes a self-fulfilling kind of circle. And this is where I really like what we've done in the podcast and talking about these deeper rotation guys, because they kind of cycle through. They play a little bit, they play a little bit, and they play a little bit more. And by the time the headliners leave, there's some there's hysteria. Who's going to play? Oh, how will we replace all these guys? Well, it's been right here in front of you. It's the guys that have been playing and contributing for the last several years that they've not been paying attention to. You know, people are going to say, how do we replace Blue? And look, he's a star guy, you know, but how do we replace him? Well, we're going to have an open competition with, you know, Maurice Smith and Eddie Jackson and Cyrus and these guys that have been playing, that we're not plucking, you know, somebody green wet behind the ears that is going to be, you know, still learning and growing, but someone that, you know, that does also have experience and has demonstrated capability.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Who gets your mini game ball, man?
I'm going to go with my mini game ball, Deion Ballou. And I'm going to do this for two reasons. One is, we're just sitting here talking about the DBs, and
we haven't even talked about him.
And he's our best. He's our best cornerback. Now, if we had to say who's our best DB, you know, that's an entirely different discussion, because I really like Ha Ha and Landon. But at cornerback, hands down, Deion Blue's our best cover man. And what he brings to the team is phenomenal, because once he's out there, he takes away half the field. And then that affords us the opportunity to get experience to a Cyrus or an Eddie Jackson, you know, where we can rotate that safety over and kind of give them help, because we know we've got the coverage. And so that's certainly one way I want to go, because he deserves credit for his contribution. And he's going to be another guy that's going to graduate, that not everyone kind of knew his name, and almost like a Menzie. Yes. We're going to miss them when they're gone, because they're JUCOs, and so they didn't go through the heavy recruiting process where everyone kind of gets hot and bothered over, you know, out of breath about, you know, these guys' talents. And so they kind of come in, and then they go, and then they're gone before, you know, who was that guy? And so, you know, Deion Ballou is going to be that guy. And then I kind of want to give a little bit of nod to what I think was a little gamesmanship on the way of Saban. Look, we know Deion Ballou is a little banged up. I don't think he was a taped up mash job like Saban maybe kind of made it sound in his press conference. And so what is Tennessee? First thing they do, we're going after that guy. And it was almost like he was just toying with the Tennessee coaching staff, that I'm just going to put this out there and I'm going to see how quick they jump at it. And sure enough, they seem to jump right at it.
No, absolutely. I think that's a great pick. I know when he intercepted the lame duck pass by Worley, and he was making all those cuts and spins, you turned to me and said, man, he must not be as hurt as they say he is. Mm-hmm. Because that run back did not look like somebody who was having still struggling with a toe issue. I am going to give mine to two guys. First of all, I want to give it to Cyrus for what I mentioned. Cyrus made a couple big plays, man. And one was on a big, I think both of his pass deflects were on third downs. And so that was huge for him. And the other one I want to give is to D-Liner. And I just, you know, for the reasons we mentioned, dude, he came in with 6 minutes and 8 seconds left in the game. Tennessee passed the ball three times on that drive, so three and out. He didn't really get to show anything. But on their last drive with 4 minutes left in the game, he got in on two tackles. And so he got in on two tackles in the course of seven plays. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. He contributed, you know, even in that limited space. So I hope that's representative of what we're going to see. I have to think, look, there's other coaches where we literally would kind of wring our hands. Like, did we just waste a year for this guy? Because, again, we've seen it happen. I don't think this coaching staff does this. I think they manage their roster, you know, much better. I think they see both the micro and the macro pictures, and they make the best decision across multiple spectrums, if you will. And so we're going to see a lot of D-liner, and I certainly hope that this is representative of what we're going to see. And we may wake up in the SEC championship game or in the bowl game, and then all of a sudden, you know, D-liner is just a guy that's contributing, you know, routinely and making big plays. And we say, you know, wasn't that just brilliant that you know, we stripped the red shirt off of him and at this point in the season, and what was it that the coaches saw in practice? Really would like to kind of dig into that. But, you know, kind of here now is planting that seed. And so his first action, his first play, he gets a Tommy Mini game ball. So that's a high honor.
Absolutely, man. Hey, what about special teams, man? The first name you've got to say is Chris John Jones, right?
Well, I think you got to. I think that, you know, he had two pretty good returns, a 48-yarder and a 57-yarder. And one thing that we both mentioned, you know, we both kind of turned to each other and mentioned during the game is he has demonstrated an increased patience, you know, kind of running, you know, behind his blocks and knowing where the blocks are going to set up. You know, he seemed to be very fluid and ran with patience. And I think that helped him get some of these yards on these returns. If he had just, you know, lit his hair on fire and just took off running, he doesn't end up with this many return yards.
Well, he doesn't. And I think you can't underestimate when you just mentioned those yards. Okay. I think it's important to mention that Tennessee only kicked the ball off twice. So when we talk about getting on you early, okay, and just knocking you on your tail to start with, we won the toss. We said we wanted the ball. So out of the chute, 48-yard kickoff return. Yep. Well, then after they get their other opportunity to kick the ball off, he has a 57-yarder. And so when you talk about flipping the field and you talk about the impact of special teams, for you to say that those were his yards – but oh, by the way, he only had two kickoff returns for that 106 yards. That's pretty awesome.
Yep.
Hey, what did you think about? I thought it was interesting that we got to see Cody Mundell do a kickoff there. Were you surprised that when Cade Foster was banged up, that Cody Mundell comes in to get what I think might have been his first kickoff of his Alabama career?
Yeah, I think that. You know, you think you go straight to Adam Griffith and, you know, certainly he had some kickoffs too. I wonder, and I've not, you know, studied into this. And so I don't know kind of what the, you know, I think he's going to be all right. Or I think he got kicked in the shin and I think he was a little dinged, but I think there's a little bit of, well, now we have, you know, for the sake of this window of time that we are in, and it could just have been the extent, you know, that could close Saturday afternoon, right? Because, you know, we do have a bye, but we have a new number two at the kickoff unit. And so
yes,
what better time than now in this blowout to see what we got in game action?
I just thought it was interesting. I just wonder how that played out, right? Hey, Cody, we need you to go in and kick off. Okay, coach.
Well, you have to think that, you have to think that he's done it before. You know, maybe not in a game, but that he's practiced it, that, you know, we kind of know what our pecking order is. So he may have been a little bit of surprised, but, you know, it's not like they came and got one of us from the stands and asked us to do it.
No, that's true. I just thought it was interesting that you know, he came in and Adam did not right away, because then Adam did the rest of the kickoffs.
Yep.
So it was, you know, Cody only came in for that one opportunity. And so I just found that interesting. And when he did come in, by the way, he did it right. It was a touchback. What did you think about the kickoff coverage for the first time this year? And I don't know how Young ranked for Tennessee coming into this game. You know, he finished with a respectable, you know, he had five opportunities. He finished for almost 150 yards, you know, but he had one big return of 45 yards where the kid Adam Griffith is the one that saved the day. We did have a couple lapses on kickoff coverage for the first time this year.
Yeah, there were two in the 40s, 144, you know, 45 and 148. And so they, you know, it was the most success that we've seen against our coverage units all season. And it's the kind of thing that it's going to happen. I mean, you know, somebody's going to put in the extra work and, you know, it's going to happen over the course of a season. And so what I take away from this is, yep, this is why you don't want to kick it to the three and force them to return, because guess what? Somebody's going to. And so you kick it in the end zone. If they want to make the bad decision to bring it out, that's a different thing. But your strategy is not to force them to return it, because this is what you'll get.
No, that's true. And I want to correct myself here. On the first big return that Tennessee had, Cade Foster did kick it to the goal line, and they brought it out 44 yards after they were down 28-0. But after Cody came in there, apparently Cade Foster did come back out to try at the beginning of the second half, and this is my bad. And that's when he had the horrible kick where he just kind of bounced the ball, okay? It started bouncing at the 20, and the guy picked it up on the run at the 10-yard line.
Yep.
And then from then on, we saw Adam. And so maybe that's that shin you were talking about. They tried to have him make a run out there, and he wasn't able to go. Anything else? You know, I guess we got to give Cody a little love at the punt category. I think Andrew had in his article somewhere here, I read that I think he only had five punts in the whole month of October, man. The guy's got he's got the best job on the Alabama football team right now, doesn't he?
He really does. You know, he had five for October. He had nine punts, you know, against Virginia Tech. So I think that speaks, you know, and he's sort of the manifestation of that. You know, it's more representative of the offensive performance, you know, not getting the three and out and not having to punt the ball away. But, you know, he does seem to, you know, have an easy job relative to, and he's performing well, right?
Performing. Yeah. He killed that ball inside the 20 that time, man. One of his two punts were awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, you could, he had two for 40, but he's not, you know, like you said, one of them was inside the 10. And so, you know, it's not like he's going to get a 50 yarder on that. He's doing some coffin corner, some precision kicking. And so it's impressive as it is his performance. And so, you know, the coverage unit, yeah, probably a couple of things to tighten up there. You know, I don't think we're going to revert to just giving up a lot of yards. I think we're going to, you know, get back to what our average is, which is some pretty, you know, impressive performance in coverage unit. So that's what I look for there.
Okay. Well, what do you think about the bye week? It kind of comes at a good time, doesn't it?
Well, I think it really does. I think, you know, again, it goes back to how the season sets up, and it sets up really well for us. You know, I go back to, you know, coming out of the Ole Miss game, you know, we beat them 35-0, which really felt good. But I think that there was still a hint of, we still don't know what we've got, because, you know, there was still the offense didn't play well against Virginia Tech, and we were hopeful that was really just their defense, but we didn't know. And, you know, Texas A&M, their defense is awful, but man, they scored a lot of points and a lot of yards against us, and we just didn't know. And we didn't look like we wanted to look against Colorado State, and we just didn't know what Ole Miss was. You know, is this what we are, or is this just, you know? And so we kind of branded October as, this is the self-improvement month for the team. And man, we cashed in on that, I think. You know, no sacks for the month. You know, our margin of win for the month of October, four games, was 35 points or more. Our closest game, and it's ironic, it was this one, right? The closest margin of victory we had in October was 35 points.
Wow. I mean, that is awesome.
Five scores, you know,
that is awesome. You know, this game could have been a lot worse.
Oh, so. Yeah, absolutely. But, you think McCarron was 70 of 99 for 980 yards and 10 touchdowns, you know, in the month of October. You know, we only punted the ball five times in the month of October. I'm just saying, you know, what we needed to see in this month, we saw it. So, let's go back. Let's do a little self-scouting. Let's get healthy. Let's not get in trouble. You know, the expression I like to use is let's win the bye week. You know, let's not do something stupid and, you know, a player can't play. Let's get back. You know, let's get right. Let's do our treatments. Let's do our practices. And then now let's go out against LSU in a couple of weeks and let's continue this path. I really like where we are as a team right now. I really do. And I'm excited about what this last bit of the season has in store for us.
Oh, absolutely, man. It is definitely setting up well for us.
Yes. Well, I want to kick it to, unless you have something else, I want to kick it to some of our five-star reviews on iTunes.
Man, I am ready to listen to some people tell me how bad of a job I'm doing.
Well, man, I could do that anytime.
No, just for the listeners, not from you, man.
All right. Well, you know, we're up to 37 ratings, which is phenomenal. And I've gone through, you know, I think it's 36 five stars and one, I think, was a 4-star. And really, they were asking, when is your next show?
Okay.
And so that's cool, right? Even the one that didn't give us a 5-star was wanting more content.
No, so, absolutely.
But we're up to 37. Our goal was 50. And so I feel, you know, really glad that we're progressing. And so I just want to encourage, you know, hey, go out there and give us an authentic review. Give us some feedback. Help us get better. And certainly let us know what you like about the show. And so the three that we've gotten, three 5-star reviews in the last week, we got Kyle W. Reed. This podcast isn't for the casual fan. Great second and third level analysis. By far the most informative podcast, college or pro, that I've heard. And I have a desk job, so I've heard a few of them. The guys breakdown of the games are exactly what I'm looking for when it comes to the players, strategies, and opponents. The best psychoanalysis in the biz. Wow, that's pretty cool.
That's awesome.
That is. Tabic 02, I like this one. I like all of them, but if you love Alabama football, you will love this podcast. If you don't love Alabama football, you still might. So that's pretty good.
Oh, I like that. That's good.
You know, keep up the good work. And then we got Ace Cannon 1. I think that's the sequel to the Thunder Force 90 movie.
Okay.
I have both of those on my DVR, and I can't wait to watch them.
Okay.
But Ace Cannon 1, Tom and Dave are drinking the Alabama Kool-Aid. Actually, I like that Kool-Aid that your wife made before the game, but that's a different story. They do an outstanding job of breaking down the weekly minutia. To subscribe to this podcast is a no-brainer decision if you want to keep up with the X's and O's of the Tide. So we appreciate that. We really enjoy all the reviews, and it's kind of fun to kind of go through them. And so we hope that if you're listening, you give it a thought. Maybe go out to iTunes and give us an authentic review. Again, 50 is our target. I don't know what Tommy's going to do if we get to 50, but we'll definitely post it on the web.
Absolutely, man. We're going to have another party, it sounds like.
Very good. Well, hey, I appreciate it. This has been fun. Looking forward to the bye week. Definitely win the bye. And with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Thanks for listening. Roll Tide. Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course. Roll Tide.